KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
You listen, if you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks show business.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week, The Artist, a film that's not only in black and white, it's silent. In today's world, it's almost unimaginable. Plus, translating the Onion newspaper to television. But first, the Hollywood news banter. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
I'm joined by my banter companion, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Hello, John.
Hello, Kim.
So, John, holiday weekend coming up, and for those who have had a little too much turkey, there will be a cornucopia of films on offer at the theaters.
Yes, holiday weekend, Thanksgiving, is one of the best weekends of the year for movies, especially for family films. So there are no fewer than three movies that are going after the same exact audience, parents and their kids. There's Martin Scorsese's Hugo, there's the animated Arthur Christmas, and then there's the lovable Muppets, all opening on Wednesday. And then they're followed a couple days later by a special sneak preview of Fox's We Bought a Zoo. So it is a demolition derby.
Yeah, and of course, they're all piling in there because they're concerned about standing out from the clutter as the holidays come near and people start to get distracted and shop. And it's really, really hard to get focus on your product in this environment.
No, and all three of these movies have to fend off the next Twilight movie, which is doing incredibly well as we speak. So it is one of those things where you look at it from a distance and say, what was everybody thinking? Why would you open three similar movies against each other? But again, as you said, that audience is available starting Wednesday, pretty much through the end of the year, especially as vacations start to kick in. And there's tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars to be made. But I think one of these movies, and I'm not sure what it's going to be, is really going to suffer from all the competition.
So speaking of tough competition, ICM, you know, which has been one of the big Hollywood agencies, is in what seems to be almost a death spiral with power struggle and disarray. And I don't even know what the future will hold for them.
No, as a talent agency, ICM is a little bit like the Chicago Cubs. They are in the major leagues, but they're never quite close to the top. I mean, they have a fair film department. They have directors like Roman Polanski, Tom Hooper, who won the Oscar for King's Speech. Their acting talent is a little thinner. People like Richard Gere, John Hamm. And they have a really good TV department compared to their film department. Chuck Lorre, Shonda Rhimes, Vince Gilligan. But they are always, you know, a client or two short of being superstars.
And, you know, it's even generous to call the film department fair based on what I'm hearing from agents around town. It's just, you know, ICM has been long troubled with internal squabbles between Jeff Berg and Chris Silverman, the two top guys. But the person who's really in charge is actually a money man from Greenwich, Connecticut. It's this guy, Suhail Rizvi. Very wealthy, made a shrewd investment in the agency several years ago, has made a lot of money, I'm told. Very mysterious guy in Hollywood. He doesn't hang out. He goes to Cannes but doesn't like want to go to premieres. He's not a party guy. We couldn't even find a picture of this guy, but he is driving the ICM bus right now. And what we're told is that he thought he would use this as a way in to start a bigger entertainment business and media business. And he's sort of seems to have lost interest. And I think the ICM agents are kind of his employees now and struggling to make something of this agency. And they just don't have a lot of flexibility and freedom to create something that works.
No, it does feel as if they're going to have to merge with another agency. I don't know if it's United Talent or Paradigm, but it does feel like ICM needs some momentum and it needs it fast.
And John, there's been a loss of momentum for James L. Brooks. After 21 years at Sony with a deal that's produced a lot of great movies, he's gone. He's off the lot.
And he did not end with a bang, but with a whimper. This is the director of Terms of Endearment, Broadcast News, but more recently Spanglish, I'll Do Anything, and How Do You Know? And in some ways, it's the end of an era, not just for a director deal, but for Sony Pictures. I mean, Sony and Amy Pascal were incredibly loyal to this director, even when his movies were not succeeding. So in some ways, it's a little bit sad, but as a business decision, it seems to make total sense.
Yes, it's really hard to question. I mean, how do you know was a terrific, over $100 million budget and a terrific shot to the bottom line? It just absolutely cratered. So, you know, he's back in his very comfortable offices at Fox where he has The Simpsons, and we don't have to have a fundraiser for him. But as you say, you know, we talked recently about producers losing their deals and wandering in the wilderness. And now we have another one who, despite all of his achievements, it just doesn't have a movie deal.
No, it's one thing to take a bet on somebody like Chris Nolan. It's another thing entirely to make a deal with a director like James L. Brooks, whose movies are a little bit more idiosyncratic. They're not nearly as commercial. And right now, they're just not really in favor.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Kim.
That's John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. As John Horn and I just discussed, the Thanksgiving weekend usually means big business for the studios, and a lot of them are placing big bets on family movies. But if you're looking for something a little different, you're also in luck, at least if you live in LA or New York, because this year the holiday brings a very rare bird indeed, The Artist. This most unusual film, in black and white and almost but not quite completely silent, is set in Hollywood in the late 1920s. It follows the fate of a dashing movie star who's unprepared to make the transition to talking pictures. French actors play the lead roles, Jean Dujardin as the star and Bérénice Bejo as a rising young actress. Americans, including John Goodman and James Cromwell, appear in supporting roles. The Artist premiered at the Cannes Film Festival in May, where Dujardin won the Best Actor Award. The film is an awards contender in the U.S. too, but it's still such an unusual gamble that it's hard to imagine how it was conceived and financed. Our guests today, writer-director Michelle Hazanavicius and producer Thomas Langman, came to KCRW to answer those questions. Hazanavicius explained that his previous box office hits paved the way to try something different.
Well, after I made my two previous movies with Jean Dujardin were two spoof movies.
Right, spy spoofs.
Yeah, spy spoofs. And it was big successes in France. So when you have two successes, whatever you can say, people take it more seriously.
You get to play a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. And I've been very lucky to meet Thomas because... I mean, I met some other producers before, and we talked about this idea, this desire to make a silent movie, and I really felt that they were a little bit embarrassed with that because they didn't know how to do it, and they saw the difficulties of financing, the difficulties of doing it, of selling it, and when I met Thomas, I mean, I knew Thomas for a long time. And I knew he really wanted to make a movie with me. And so he wanted to make a movie with me. And I said, okay, this is the kind of movie I would love to do. And I start to tell him one or two sequences. And I remember his face. And he was like a child, like, and. And so I knew he was, well, hooked. 2 days later, he called me back and he said, listen, if that's the movie you want to do, a black and white silent movie, I'm okay to produce it. And I felt it was really serious and he would do.
And it was.
yeah, it was.
Well,
serious.
So let me just pause for, I'm going to come back in 1 second, but where did you meet Thomas? How did you seek him out or?
Well, I knew Michel, but not so well. But I had seen his movies, and I was a great fan of his work. And I've always wanted to work with him. So when I had the chance to do it, I felt that was the good time, the right time. And it's true that, of course, I was a bit afraid by silent black and white. But I thought if Michel succeed... In those days, with all those 3D movies, sci-fi and video games, and if he succeeds in making a good story, and then it would be original, apart from others.
So tell me about the process of when, now he's talked you into it, Michelle has talked Tomas into it, and then you have to go out and talk somebody else into paying for it, or how did you finance it?
Yeah, well, in France, it's rare. We had the chance, both of us, to have made a success before. And I always knew and learned from my father, who was a producer, that you need to make success in order to take some risk and to gamble on a more difficult movie. So I went to see the partner that I work with, and, well, most of them said no, but we finally found pieces of what we needed, and I must admit I had to put the rest of it.
You had to put the rest of it?
Yes.
Which is not the usual thing.
It's no. It doesn't exist, usually.
Not too often, yeah.
Not too often, yeah. But that's the way cinema has been done for many, many years. Producers were taking a risk. Now it's true that the system is a bit different. But I'm a bit unconscious. it's true that my mother used to say that my biggest strength was to be unconscious.
Just oblivious to the danger, you mean?
Yeah. Well, for me, cinema and producing is about taking a risk. It's about doing bets.
Will you tell us what the budget was?
Well, in dollar, the budget is close to 15.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what percentage of that came from the pockets of the producer?
Well, we had about half finance and another half not finance.
That's pretty considerable risk for you.
Yeah, and we had no subsidies at all from France.
Because you shot here?
Yeah, because we had American technicians, American actor, and the story was taking place in Hollywood. But the film, if we had shot the film in Europe, it would have been completely different. We were so happy to have taken this decision to come to Hollywood to make the movie.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with producer Tomas Langman and filmmaker Michelle Hazanavicius. Their new movie is The Artist, a silent film about Hollywood's transition to talkies. It stars French and American actors, including John Goodman as a studio chief and James Cromwell as a driver and valet. Naturally, the film had to be shot on a low budget. No one took their normal rates, but because it's a period piece, the costs climbed during production. So the director, Michelle Hazanavicius, had to go to producer Tomas Langman asking for more money.
We were working on the movie here in Los Angeles, and I knew that we need more. Like 9.5, and we have like 6 or something like that. And so he said to me, I can go to 7.5. I can put 1 million and a half of my pocket. And I say, Tomas, I'm, unfortunately, it's not enough. So we have to find a solution. So he said, okay, so I'll go to 8. I say, okay, I'll try. But I came back to him.
You know,
and I say,
we the never-ending story.
and finally, I say to him, listen, I can tell you that we're going to do it for, let's say, 8.5. I can tell you that. But I don't believe in it. And when finally he said, okay, let's do it for 9. So he put a lot of money. And I say, okay. But he said to me, okay, but now you have to do a masterpiece. And I say, yeah, sure, no problem. Okay. And I hang up. And then you're a little bit, you know, confused because you have to do a
Everything
masterpiece.
Has to be perfect.
And,
yeah.
And I say to the guys, well, we have the 9 million we wanted to have, but the bad news is we have to do a masterpiece, guys. So,
did you go to the studios looking for financing at all?
Not the studio in the U.S., but I must say we've been in the very early stage when the film was finished. We went to see the Weinstein Company,
right?
Because we knew they were the kind of people who would like that kind of movie and that kind of bet.
Right, they appreciate a gamble.
Yeah, and they love European cinema. So Harvey Weinstein was invited to come even before the selection in Cannes. It was about a month before the selection. And he was the first one, except from us, to see the movie. And he was sitting alone into the room. and I was at the back, and I was supposed to leave, but I stayed just to check the how it went, and he was laughing through the whole movie.
Oh, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, that was a good thing, and I knew that Harvey Weinstein had a reputation and of being able to say things and sometimes change and like another movie. But at the end of the screening, I spoke with him, and I saw in his eyes that he was really passionate by the movie, and so he bought the U.S., the U.K., and almost the whole world.
Now let's go to the casting. You have a, and you do have your two French leads, mm-hmm. your wife,
Bérénice Bejo, and Jean Dujardin, yes.
Jean Dujardin, right? And then you have James Cromwell and John Goodman.
Yes.
So how did you decide, like, I want two of these and two of those?
Well, the two lead roles, I wrote them with the actors in mind.
Right.
So it was easy in a way. And for the American actors, I mean, I was a little bit afraid because in France, some people told me, you'll see, it's hell to just to reach actors and to talk with them. And if you want them to read the script, you have to pay them to read the script. A lot of fantasies about American actors. And I have to say, it was absolutely simple, and I sent the script to John Goodman and James Cromwell, and they read the script very quickly, and I met John Goodman like maybe, I don't know, 1 week or 10 days after having sent him the script, and we had a meeting in his agent's office, and we met like 4 or 5 minutes, not more, and he was enthusiastic about the script. I think he just wanted to check if I was normal and if I was trustable.
In 4 minutes, he came to the conclusion.
Yeah, I guess he just scanned me like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, he looked you up and down.
And he was our first choice. I mean, we wanted to have him. It was a dream for us to.
What was the basis for that?
Well, you, in France, we are huge fans of the Coen Brothers movies. Really, the Coen Brothers are icons for
right.
for the French.
Pretty, they do pretty well here too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
everywhere. But it's
everywhere,
true that John Goodman is an icon.
And John Goodman is really like, yeah, the actor of the Coen Brothers.
He's
absolutely
stuff.
Yeah, he's wonderful, and he's a wonderful actor. And now, when I think of an American producer, and even I have to say, even when I think of Harvey Weinstein,
I was going to say well, Harvey Weinstein.
He looks like Harvey.
I think
well, certainly
of
they're both
John Goodman in the movie.
Big men.
Yeah, yeah, with big neck like this, and
big voice.
Yeah, you can hear his voice in the movie, but
right.
they have big
you
voice.
Hear,
both.
Yeah,
I mean, no,
voice.
you have the voice of John Goodman yeah. actually in the movie
at one point. Yeah.
So yeah, it was really the first choice. So I was so happy to have the luck to work with such an actor and such a man, because he's really, I mean, he's a delicious man. He's really charming and so gifted, so talented. It's really, really, I feel really lucky. And James Cromwell, when the casting director told me about James Cromwell, I didn't even think about him, because I didn't think that he was able to accept that kind of role. And she said, why not? And I said, yeah, sure, I would love to work with James Cromwell. And we sent him the script. He read it very quickly, and I meet him, and it was not 4 minutes. It was more 3 hours. And he wanted to know everything, because he's an intellectual, really. He wanted to know everything about the script, the story, the concept, the why silence, why him, why the character, everything.
You felt like you were auditioning for him.
Exactly. That's what. Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. I was auditioning, and at the end, he said, "Yeah." He said yes.
Coming up after a short break, shooting a silent movie in the new millennium, plus translating the satire of the Onion newspaper to television. You're listening to The Business from KCRW and KCRW.com.
Hi, this is Darby Maloney, producer of The Business. Catch up with The Business and lots of film and television news on our Facebook page. Search for KCRW's The Business and click like.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. French filmmakers Michel Hazanavicius and Thomas Langman are hoping that their unique black and white silent film, The Artist, will capture the hearts of moviegoers in this era of 3D spectacles. The Artist opens in New York and L.A. on November 25th before rolling out in other cities. Shot in Hollywood, the film offers a poignant look at the transition from silent films to talkies. I asked producer Thomas Langman and writer-director Michelle Hazanavicius what it was like on the set when you make a silent movie.
I played a lot of music on set, so it was more about the mood, the atmosphere, much more than the dialogues.
And the music you played on set wasn't necessarily the music that we were hearing when we watched the film. It's completely specific music.
Yeah, the music has been composed after the shooting, but I used a lot of classical Hollywood era scores, like all the great composers like Franz Waxman, Max Steiner, Bernard Herrmann, Leonard Bernstein, all the great composer, yeah.
When you wrote the script, the dialogue that is just lips moving, you didn't write those lines?
No, I didn't, because I didn't want actors to work on something that would not be in the movie. And I know that actors, when they have a text, when they have lines, that's what they're working on. And they asked for me. I mean, Bernice and John, they really asked for me, when will we have some lines? Because we don't want to come on set with no lines, and we don't. And I say, yeah, I'll give you some lines later, no problem. And I didn't. And because I wanted them to work on their bodies, on their attitude, on their gesture, but not on the text. So
they improvise the lines in between?
Not so much. I mean, the character of Jean is a little taciturn. I mean, he's not...
he's not chatty.
Yeah, exactly. So he didn't improvise. For some sequences he did, but not so much. For one sequence, Jean, he had to speak a lot. And he's not such, he's not friendly English speaking. So he did all the sequence in gibberish. and it was funny because he was, And all the crew was, the French crew was laughing, really.
And the American crew thought it was French.
Exactly. Yeah, they thought it was French. And we discovered just after, yeah.
Michelle Hazanavicius is the writer-director of The Artist, and Thomas Langman is the producer. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Thanks to you.
The Onion newspaper has been printing its particular brand of satire for nearly 25 years. And now there's an Onion empire with books, web and television series, blogs, apps, and a movie. These projects have met with varying degrees of commercial success. The movie was a troubled production, which ultimately went straight to DVD in 2008. This past summer, Comedy Central canceled The Onion Sports Dome, a half-hour series parodying ESPN's Sports Center, after only one season. But The Onion is still in the television game with The Onion News Network, a parody of 24-hour cable news that launched in 2007 as a web series. Earlier this year, IFC tried it out as a weekly TV show, and it's now in its second season. When The Onion began the web series, the organization made a big commitment to its first real foray into video, creating an internal production company and funding it to the tune of $1 million. We recently spoke with two of the key players behind The Onion News Network, Carol Kolb, the head writer and former editor-in-chief of The Onion newspaper, and executive producer Will Graham. We asked them first how The Onion, a free newspaper, could afford to put $1 million into starting a web series.
It's advertising. That's where money comes from.
Yeah, and I think also The Onion's lucky enough to be owned by a guy named David Schaefer, who, you know, is hopeful and I think we are kind of a successful and sustaining business, but isn't necessarily trying to make a gazillion dollars out of it, because I think it's so easy in the current kind of climate on the web and for sure on TV to kind of get sucked into these things where you kind of become what we're making fun of, if that makes sense. And but we really do think that kind of preserving the integrity of the content really is the most important thing, even if you could make $1 billion by putting Cheetos into everything.
When learning to write for video, The Onion writers had to train themselves to think visually and throw out jokes that work best on the written page.
there's a writer's room, and everything sort of comes down to, you know, just pitching thousands of headlines and then pulling out the ones that make everyone laugh. And then we sort of all get our fingers in it. You know, our process is very collaborative. Usually by the time, you know, a script is finished, we can't really even remember, you know, whose idea it was, because we sort of rewrite it so many times and sort of get everyone's input and everyone gets their hands in it.
State Department has announced that North Korean leader Kim Jong-il has agreed to suspend his country's nuclear program in exchange for the lead role in the next Batman movie. For more on this story, let's go now to our senior White House correspondent, Jane Carmichael. Jane, what exactly led to this deal?
Well, Brooke, it's the result of 6 weeks of high-level talks in Geneva that began after Kim Jong-il sent Secretary of State Clinton several elaborate oil paintings he had made of himself in a Batman outfit.
A key part of creating the Onion News Network was casting the anchor. To make it authentic, they chose Suzanne Senna. She had been a late-night anchor on Fox News, and she hosted a show called Celebrity Homes.
Hello, I'm Brooke Alvarez, award-winning newscaster, but also just a woman who wants her fans to know her better. I know I can come off a little icy on set, but truly, I'm a regular person just like you. After work is over, I eat my food pellets and take my youth serum injections just like anyone else.
We think of her as kind of post-human, like she might almost be kind of part android or genetically modified to be better than the rest of us. But also, I think moving towards TV, I think one of the really exciting parts was developing that character. And I think one of the biggest sideways compliments we got working with Suzanne was she sort of said, "Well, this is just exactly like working at Fox," and that was a good payoff for us.
In producing the Onion News Network, Carol Kolb says the writers could be current without having to follow breaking news.
We are timely-ish, and I think we've become pretty good at sort of being predictive as opposed to responsive.
A new candidate entered the race for the Republican presidential nomination last night, and political analysts are saying he might have a better shot than any of the current contenders. His name is John Clarkson, a former congressman who fell into a coma due to a car accident shortly after he was elected 8 years ago.
John hasn't spent years in Washington playing the same old political games. He's been right here in this bed, kept alive by machines.
We asked Kolb and Graham about that ill-fated 2008 Onion movie. Carol Kolb was a writer on that project.
You know, it's fine. It's probably, you know, not the Onion's best piece of work, but it is out there, and some people seem to like it.
No, but I do think actually that is really part of the story of how web video and then ultimately how the Onion News Network show on IFC kind of came about, was that the movie took years. There were all these partnerships with various different studios and producers, and most of them were probably very well-intentioned, but I think one of the real lessons that the organization took away from it was that because of just the incredible specificity of the brand and the way that we really kind of think about things that I think is different than even other kinds of comedy out there, that we really had to do things ourselves. And that's why, you know, in starting web video, we kind of built a production company that was entirely in-house, and that meant that every person involved in the production kind of really understood the creative goals and the aesthetics. And if anything, it made us maybe a little more isolationist, a little more likely to just ignore the rest of the world and do things our own way.
That was Will Graham, executive producer of the Onion News Network, and Carol Kolb, the series head writer. The Onion News Network airs Friday nights at 10 p.m. on IFC. And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. To make a comment about today's show, go to kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can listen to us on demand with our KCRW smartphone apps, and you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.